Good morning, friends and brethren. It's very good to see you this morning. Glad you are here. Glad to see visitors with us as well. Glad you've come our way. If you would, let's be turning to the book of 3 John. 3 John, we're going to do just a very simple textual kind of study this morning. There's no PowerPoint. We're just going to go verse by verse and I think learn a few points that will be helpful to us. Sometimes I have wondered just what the complexion of the first century church was like. And when I say that, I mean, what were the people like? And of course, we read through the New Testament, we get some glimpses of some of the people, some of them really good, and some of them deficient in what they should be. We know the most, I suppose, about some of the writers, the apostles in particular, those like Paul and Peter and John. But the book of 3 John gives us a glimpse of some of the other characters of the first century. Three other men. In fact, the title, I suppose, for this lesson could be The Three Men of 3 John. We get a glimpse into the life of these three men, and I think we're able to learn some things from them. We might ask some questions about those who were just average Christians of the first century. Were they more spiritual than Christians today? Were they above the personal issues or problems that we deal with or face? Or did they experience the same kind of problems that we see in so many churches today? What was it like? And this letter gives us, I think, some insight on that. And so when we look at the letter, it's a private letter from the Apostle John to a Christian named Gaius. And it's within this letter that we find the portraits of three different men, and it gives us a glimpse, again, of life in the first century church. And when we examine the letter, we learn that in some ways there's not a lot of difference between people back then and those who make up the Lord's church today. And it reminds us that this very letter, though 1,900 years old or 2,000 years old, is just as relevant today as it was when John penned these words. We begin by looking at the text, 3 John chapter 1. The elder, to the beloved Gaius, whom I love in the truth. Beloved, I pray that you may prosper in all things and be in health, just as your soul prospers. For I rejoiced greatly when brethren came and testified of the truth that is in you, as you do walk in the truth. I have no greater joy than to hear that my children walk in the truth. Okay, here's some insight in this man named Gaius. Now, Gaius was a Roman name. It was a somewhat popular name. In fact, we can find it five times in the New Testament. And I've wondered a couple of times if maybe even there was another reference to the same man, Gaius. Well, I don't know. I don't think we could prove that in any way. But what we do know about this Gaius is that evidently he was a dear friend of John. Maybe even a convert of John. And he was known for his faithfulness and his hospitality. And his character is one worth imitating. You know, we take particular notice of the prayer that John had for Gaius. In verse 2, he says, I pray that you may prosper in all things and be in health, just as your soul prospers. I thought that to be kind of an interesting phrase in the way he has said that. I mean, now we might ask the question, I mean, how do you pray for a dear friend? Well, John prayed for his prosperity. But I'm not convinced that he was just praying for physical prosperity here because it's connected to something spiritual. You know, and sometimes even we pray for one another with regard to physical needs and issues. Well, that's good. That's fine that we should do that. But he prayed that Gaius would prosper physically as well as spiritually. Now, what if our physical condition was the same as our spiritual condition? What kind of health would we be in? How would that compare? I mean, if we have some kind of a physical concern, that gets our attention right away. If the doctor were to say to us that we have some kind of an issue that's a physical issue and it needed to be addressed right away, now I'll tell you, I think most of us we'd take heed. We'd listen to that. And we would take action as well. We would do something about that. Well, how would you gauge your spiritual condition? And how would we measure up if we looked at it that way and compared to physical terms? Now, in regard to physical terms, if we say, well, our spiritual health is perfect, you know, whatever we're doing then is obviously working. Now, on the physical side, we know that eating well and taking in nutrients are important, and we need to keep that up. But is that true of our spiritual condition? Because as well, we see that we have to do some things to keep up our physical condition. And sometimes on the physical side, we might say, well, I mean, physically, there's some improvements that could be made. It might be our doctor that tells us that. You need a little more exercise. You need to take better care of yourself. You know, it's the same on the spiritual side. That sometimes the spiritual body needs a little more exercise. It needs some more nutrients coming in. And that's going to equate to more Bible study and more worship and more prayer and meditation. Now, I know on the physical side, because I've heard this from some of you and you've heard this from me, that if there are some problems on the physical side, I'm going to do whatever I can to make improvements. But are you willing to do the same thing on the spiritual side? Are you willing to take in the nutrients that you need? Are you willing to make the effort to improve your spiritual well-being? You know, that improved diet consists of the things that we are putting into our bodies on the physical side. And spiritual diet consists of those things that we are putting into our minds and in our souls. And so, how do we measure up that way? Comparing that spiritual to the physical, and how we take care of one as compared to the other. You know, if we went to the doctor and he says, okay, we have a serious issue here. You know, that some things are going to get really bad if you don't start taking better care of yourself. Your blood pressure is high and your cholesterol is off the charts. You know, and you're going to have to take care of this. And you know, sometimes those kinds of issues can come upon us and we don't even know it. But when you become aware of those things, you get pretty anxious and you determine, I'm going to do something about this. On the spiritual side, I wish we'd have just as much interest. Well, no. I wish we'd have more interest about the spiritual needs that we have and make sure we are improving in that way. And that was part of John's prayer. You know, that you be in good health, that you prosper in health, just as your soul prospers. Now see, what he was saying about Gaius was that, as far as John could determine, spiritually, Gaius was strong. You know, he was doing the things he needed. He was walking in truth. He was an encouragement to others. His hospitality had become well known. And John's prayer was, I want you to be just as strong physically as you are spiritually. And sometimes we might even think of some things in the other way. I want to be strong physically. And, oh, yeah, I want to be spiritually strong, too. John was saying it the other way around. I'd like your physical health to be just as strong as your spiritual well-being. And I thought that was an interesting perspective that just needed to be brought out. You know, John loved Gaius because of the man he was. Gaius had a good reputation for which others testified. John had heard about the reputation of Gaius. And it caused John reason to rejoice. A good reputation does not come without effort. It's not something that just happens, but it's effort, it's consistency. In this case, it was a life that was dedicated to Christ. He was known for these things. And in verse 3 again, reading, for I rejoiced greatly when brethren came and testified of the truth that is in you, as you do walk in the truth. Here's what was known about Gaius. He stood for what was right, for truth. He walked in truth. John was all about truth. And all the writings that we've studied about the Apostle John, this aspect of truth and what is truth, that there's truth in the Lord, that we have to walk in truth, all of these aspects come up and are repeated over and over again. And when John identifies that Gaius walked in truth, well, it tells us everything about Gaius, doesn't it? About who he is and his character. And John found great joy in hearing of the faithfulness of Gaius. And maybe that verse 4, maybe that's part of where I get that impression that Gaius was a student and a convert of John. What joy it brings to the teacher when the learner excels and grows in faith. There's nothing that can bring greater joy to the teacher. But the bigger point is simply his faithfulness. That Gaius was known for his faithfulness. He was steadfast in his commitment and his service to the Lord. And then, well, there's another point. His hospitality. Verse 6, we continue reading. Beloved, you do faithfully whatever you do for the brethren and for strangers who have borne witness of your love before the church. If you send them forward on their journey in a manner worthy of God, you do well, because they went forth for His name's sake, taking nothing from the Gentiles. We, therefore, ought to receive such, that we may become fellow workers for truth. You know, again, we're talking about reputation, about that of Gaius, something he was known for, an honest concern for the well-being of all of his brethren, and for strangers as well. Being hospitable is really not so hard if we make that a part of who we are, our character. It does require absolute interest and concern for others, and it requires initiative on our part to be open in to open our lives for them. But evidently, Gaius was willing to do that. And it's even his continued support for those who are preachers, is the way I'm understanding verses 6 through 8. And that there was a concern he had for all brethren. He was hospitable to all, and even to those who are strangers. But there's a point made here as well about those that he was helping to send forward in the work that they were doing. There were those who went forth for the Lord's sake, is what the text says. I take it those who were doing the Lord's work. And so perhaps it was that Gaius could not go on with them to other places teaching, but he still did what he could do to help those who were busy about the Lord's work. That he didn't fall back from that work in any way, but again, it seems as though he excelled in that. Now, some lessons learned. If we just step back and we say, okay, what are the lessons learned from Gaius that we want to take away? I can think of several. I've tried to narrow it down to such things as Gaius continued to excel at what he did. And what he did well was walk faithfully in the Lord. And so it's an honest question for us to ask. Could that be said of us? If someone were giving a report to the Apostle John about us, what would they say? And that would that be something that they would say about us? He excelled in these things. And to excel means that we are good or proficient at what we do. And we get that in other aspects of life because there are certainly things that we want to excel in. Well, what about excelling in our work and service in the kingdom? Are we as dedicated in that regard? And then another point, reputation. Lesson learned. Reputation matters. It seems part of the effectiveness of Gaius was that as time went on, his reputation grew, the faithfulness of his work, and it even increased his ability to do good. Gaius walked in truth. He lived his faith, and he demonstrated his faith by the way that he lived, and everyone knew that. It was not something that was a secret. It was just his way and manner of life. That reputation was known to the apostle, that Gaius prospered in faith and that his faith flourished. And we should understand that we all have a reputation too, based on how we live this life and what is our reputation before the Lord. Another point is that of hospitality. A somewhat forgotten or neglected trait. The desire to demonstrate warmth and concern and love for both stranger and brethren alike. And this is a characteristic that shines and gives us so much opportunity to reach out and to touch and change lives of others in a good and in a helpful way. We struggle with that sometimes. Because we become so self-consumed with ourselves and things that we want to do that
that sometimes we fail to share ourselves with others. We enjoy the benefits that come from allowing others in our lives if we open ourselves up, if we're willing to spend time with others and take the opportunity to try to have an effect on the lives of others. And the more we do that, the more we learn and benefit from how they affect our lives. It's a reciprocal action. But many miss the opportunity for failing to open up and extend hospitality. On this matter, what would John say about us? Do we demonstrate the same kind of hospitality that Gaius did? There's another point about lessons learned from Gaius, and that was, again, his support for preachers. Sometimes we think of supporting preachers as a collective work, and sometimes we've certainly been involved in that, in helping preachers support the gospel in other places. That's a good thing for a church collectively to do. But that wasn't the point here of what John was saying to Gaius. He was bringing out and emphasizing the point that whatever it was that Gaius was ever able to do to send them forward on their journey in a manner worthy of God, he was willing to do that. And I don't even know particularly all that that means or includes. Did he have them in their home when they were passing through? Well, he was a hospitable man, we know. Perhaps that was part of it. You know, did he feed them meals as there were those working in the kingdom as they came through? I don't know. Did he give them money? I don't know. But what we do know is that whatever he did that well. And it even became part of his reputation, this matter of helping those who were working in the kingdom of God. And he did it well. But, you know, there's a second man that we can read about in 3 John. That's so different than Gaius. I mean, we're talking diametrically opposed in attitude. We look at this man called Diotrephes. We continue reading in verse 9. I wrote to the church, but Diotrephes, who loves to have preeminence among them, does not receive us. Therefore, if I come, I will call to mind his deeds, which he does, prating against us with malicious words. And not content with that, he himself does not receive the brethren and forbids those who wish to, but putting them out of the church. Beloved, do not follow what is evil, but what is good. He who does good is of God, but he who does evil has not seen God. Wow, everything that's said about this man is completely different than the attitude of Gaius. You know, Diotrephes was not a pretty person. And I have no idea what he looked like. That's not the point. Just in character. He was not a pretty person. He was the opposite of Gaius, who was showing hospitality and support of preachers and who was walking in truth. Instead, what we find here with Diotrephes is that he was a self-promoter. He strove to be first. He wanted to be in charge of everything. He wanted to be seen. He wanted to be heard. He wanted to be in control. He may have wanted respect, but, well, that wasn't the way to get it. You have to earn respect by doing the things that are right, the things that are good. He was rebellious, disobedient even. He refused to receive the authority and the teaching of the apostles. And, you know, really that's the same as refusing to receive the authority of God. Some today want to reject the apostles' teaching. And what's most amazing to me is Diotrephes, he lived in the day of the apostles. And he was still willing to reject the apostles' teaching. And so while there are so many who say that they know God, we can say with great assurity, no, you don't know God if you reject his teaching. And we can say that about Diotrephes. He was slanderous. He spoke nonsense. He slandered. He spoke against John with malicious words, we see. He was hateful. He was spiteful. He was mean. He said things intending to cause harm in some effort of drawing people to follow what he was saying. He was vindictive. He would not receive certain brethren, and he cast out others. Do it my way or else was more or less the attitude of this man. So some would say, well, who made him the judge as to who to receive or who not? Well, evidently he did. And he was just disagreeable. people pulled out of the church who wanted to show hospitality. You know, you can think of churches that you know that have been stifled even by unwelcoming and an unfriendly attitude. Maybe there was a Diotrephes there that was in control. And so the character of Diotrephes serves as a warning, as an example, not in a positive way, but in the negative way. Here's what not to do. And again, there are lessons to be learned. Just like with Gaius, there were some lessons to learn, some attitudes that we want to get a hold of. Well, here, lessons learned again of attitudes that we don't want to get a hold of. It's a painful lesson sometimes to learn that there are Christians who are not always all that they should be. And that was the case with Diotrephes. And we may have to serve in face of opposition of brethren just like him. And we must not let that affect our work in the kingdom, or let it affect our salvation, because if we become like him, we are not like Christ. We're separating ourselves from Christ. We cannot be like Diotrephes. Lesson learned. And you have to wonder how Diotrephes could have such influence in a church. How could these things be going on? Well, it says some other things. It says some have allowed Diotrephes to dominate. They let some of these things happen. That there were some who were not willing to take a stand for truth, and they were just letting him have his way. That there were some would not support those who took the stand for truth. There were others maybe who were trying to stand up against Diotrephes that were being put out of the church, and there were not others that stood up with those who were wanting to do right. So you see, there's that aspect of the story that we can learn from too. Someone said, well, there was a climate of complacency. And that may be right. But complacency will destroy a local church. Because sometimes one person with a bad attitude can sour the spirit of the whole church. I've seen that. I've seen that happen. And it's hard to deal with. But it has to be. One person with a bad attitude can destroy the reputation of a church, because in time that attitude becomes known to others, just like it had in this case. The reputation was known. There was a third man. There was a third man written about in this letter, Demetrius. Well, there is not a lot said about him, but what is said is interesting. Verse 12. Demetrius has a good testimony from all, and from the truth itself. And we also bear witness, and you know that our testimony is true. Boy, here is a man whose reputation contrasts completely the bad of Diotrephes by his good character. The differences in character show complete opposites here, one working for good, the other working for evil. Now, remember, this letter was a personal letter written to Gaius. That's where it began. And John was encouraging Gaius to imitate what was good, for he who does good is of God, is what verse 11 says. So in this personal letter to Gaius, there were these attributes of Gaius that were good that stand out to us. But here's the other comparison. You have the evil of Diotrephes, and as a contrast to that, you have the good aspects of Demetrius. Demetrius appears to be offered as a pattern for Gaius. Maybe it was a point of encouragement for Gaius. Demetrius had a good report from all of the brethren. Verse 12 says, Demetrius has a good testimony of all, and from the truth itself. I'm not sure what else good could be said about him. And like we said with it, about Demetrius, there's the least bit written about him. And yet what is written tells us so much about who he is. The pattern for his life were the mandates of God's word. That's what directed him. That's what inspired the way that he lived. His life showed clear evidence of the truth, and his willingness and his faithfulness to walk with the Lord. And even John and the other apostles could bear witness of these things. Demetrius was known for these attributes. And again, there's lessons to be learned. that there are faithful brethren that we can be influenced by. Those who are like-minded. Those who are focused on the Lord. And sometimes when we have to deal with issues and problems in churches, and let's face it, by and by that happens everywhere. We need to not be discouraged by those who are the Diotrephes of the church. We have to deal with those. And we're more able and apt to do it when we look to those Demetriuses in the church who are faithful and standing for what is right and lend encouragement to us to do what we need to do. What the contrast of good men and bad men and their effect on us. That's part of the purpose of the letter. And so what will that effect be on us? And yet there are just other passages that can come to mind where, like where Paul says, do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Romans 12 and verse 21. That needs to be us. Or as Paul said, imitate me as I imitate Christ. Paul wasn't trying to say, look at me. He was trying to say, look at Christ in me. We have to look to Christ. That was his point of emphasis in 1 Corinthians 11. And so Gaius had an example of Diotrephes, and he had the example of Demetrius. Who do you suppose he would seek to imitate? Well, his character already tells us who. That he's going to imitate the one that most imitates Christ. And so should we. We should imitate what is good for two reasons. Those who do good are of God. And those who do evil do not know God. That's what the apostle said in this letter. And so it gives us reason to make a very serious evaluation. And no, we're not trying to look at the church in this. We should just look at ourselves. It's time we have to make an evaluation of ourselves. Who am I more like? Well, I know I want to be more like Gaius and Demetrius. And if I lose sight of that and if I get off track, I want you to be the one that comes to me and say, hey, you know, we need to kind of realign where, help you realign where you need to be. And I need to listen to that. It's letters like this that give us that practical information and help and direction of being the kind of people as Christians that we should be. It's a simple textual lesson, but it's helpful to me. And I hope helpful to you. Today there could very well be someone who needs to respond to the gospel of Christ by becoming a child of God in baptism. We're hoping that you're thinking about those things and concerned about those matters. If you're a child of God that has fallen back, Jesus is still calling and so are we. We're wanting you back in the fold. We want you to be encouraged to stand right before the Lord. Can we help you? Can we encourage you? Would you come as we stand and sing?